the Koivig Pod on Off the Ball.
And it's true, like, legend of the game, and I think it's one of those that a lot of people don't really realise how much he's achieved, not only in football, but in all overall sporting.
Subscribe to the Koivig Pod on the Off the Ball app now.
Hello there, it's Owen here, and you're welcome back to Diverted, a 10-part original series for Off the Ball. It is our penultimate episode, but chronologically speaking, we're going back to the very beginning of my trip to Florida, recovering Miami Hialeah, Inter Miami, the Florida Gators, and a pillow-fighting startup. Before that, it's part 9 of my hitchhiking journey through Patagonia. I found myself in a complete mess here, and previous episodes of this podcast will inform you as to how I ended up in said mess. So Florida is coming your way in a little while, after we bring you up to speed on Patagonia. There's going to be some bad language in this episode, but if you like what you hear, a 5-star rating would be fantastic. Cheers. It was all going so well. A Chilean truck driver named Ramon had saved me from Bajo Caracoles. We had driven through the town of Gobernador Gregores, and we were on our way to El Chalten. Smooth sailing. That was until I spotted that we missed our turn for El Chalten. And when I informed Ramon, he stopped the truck, and he attempted to do a U-turn. But because he is driving a car-carrying trailer with 10 cars on it, this U-turn was obviously a disaster. His wheels have got stuck in the stones on either side of the road, and now his truck can't move. It's blocking up this entire road. After yesterday's nightmare, it's almost surreal that today has already descended into an even bigger shambles. Due to the blockage in the road, several cars have now come to a halt. There's not much anyone can do. This is a big job, and it'll require big machinery to get Ramon back on the road. A car comes along from Gobernador Gregores and goes to turn back to the town again when they see that they can't get through. Ramon approaches them and asks them if they'll drive me back towards the town as well. I tell Ramon that I'd actually like to stay and help. I mean, I could be doing important things here, such as standing there watching with my hands on my hips. But Ramon insists. I say my goodbyes to him.
Amigo, ¿es seguro?
Sí.
Okay.
And this couple drives me back to the junction where I spotted the signs for El Calafate and El Chalten.
40, por favor, voya El Chalten. Todo estuvo loco. Bloody hell.
I immediately feel guilty for leaving Ramon, but I suppose there's really nothing I could do.
Muchas gracias.
And I feel particularly stupid when I get out of the car because I realise I ain't getting another lift anytime soon.
Hasta luego.
It has just gone 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Plenty of the day left. I may not be in a vehicle, but at least I'm back on Route 40. While I'm waiting, I see these big diggers drive down Route 27. Presumably they're going to save Ramon. They come driving back an hour or so later, but there's no sign of Ramon. And I don't really take a moment to consider what that might mean, because once again, this day is about to get away from me. Nothing is happening. I expected another couple of Chilean truck drivers to come through town, but there has been nothing except a dribble of local traffic. In fact, it looks like Ramon might have been the only truck to have come through here all day. And what a mark he left. I pick up a lift off some local men to go back the other way, back into the town of Gobernador Gregores. There's nothing here, except a strange statue of a man on a horse in the middle of the town, who I can only assume is Gobernador Gregoris himself. I pop the head back into the YPF petrol station to see if there are any trucks hanging about, but this whole place is a ghost town. I stand by the road going out of town, and the day starts to drift away. Nothing. No leads. I was so confident today was going to end in success that I had actually booked a hostel in El Chal 10 while I was in Ramon's truck. And I emailed the hostel telling them that my lift literally got stuck in the road on Route 27 and that I won't make it. They'll definitely believe that. There's no fear of not getting a bed tonight though. I rock up to a small lodgings called Hospedaje Mariel and I get a room to myself for the first time in Patagonia. Small wins. Tomorrow is another day. It's 6:30 a.m. Not a peep in this town. Roughly the same number of peeps as there were at 6:30 p.m. yesterday. The average number of peeps appears to always be low in Gobernador Gregoris. A couple of hours pass as I stand along the road heading out of town once again. Not a truck in sight. I walk back for another visit to the YPF petrol station to pick up a bit of breakfast. I have officially become the Enoch Burke of Argentinian petrol stations. And then I keep walking to chance my arm standing by the road into town instead. And the outcome is the same. There is a French couple on the other side of the road to me. Other than a quick verbal introduction, we communicate with knowing looks and nods as each rare car drifts past. To be fair, there is more traffic going their way, and they do manage to hop on a truck moving north not long into the morning. I'm delighted for them, because I know what that feels like, but I'm also massively envious of them. In my opinion, the greatest text related to wanderings around Patagonia is Bruce Chatwin's book, In Patagonia. In one passage of the book, he details walking for 10 hours, not far from here, hoping for a Chilean truck driver to save him. He writes the following in his notebook. Walked all day and the next day. The road straight, grey, dusty and trafficless. The wind relentless, heading you off. Sometimes you heard a truck. You knew for certain it was a truck. But it was the wind, or the noise of gears changing down, but that was also the wind. Sometimes the wind sounded like an unloaded truck banging over a bridge. Even if a truck had come up behind, you wouldn't have heard it. And even if you'd been downwind, the wind would have drowned the engine. The road beginning and ending in a grey mirage. You'd see a dust devil behind, and though you know now never to hope for a truck, you thought it was a truck. Or there'd be black specks coming closer and you stopped, sat down and waited, but the specks walked off sideways and you realised they were sheep. At least Bruce Chatwin was walking while thumbing a lift and he was smart enough to travel with a tent. It comes up to 11:30 and I'm still here. Given I've been here for 5 hours today, the horrifying prospect of a second night in Gobernador Gregoris crosses my mind. I wonder if I will ever leave this town. I reckon if I do get a lift, there will be a Truman Show situation where I won't actually be able to leave Gobernador Gregoris. I'll just drive up against the far wall, painted like the horizon. But the latest sound of a gust of wind isn't actually the sound of a gust of wind. It is the sound of gears shifting. A Chilean truck driver has finally come along. The driver's name is Joaquin, and Joaquin pulls in for me. We're up and running. We drive back through the town of Gobernador Gregoris and out the road south. We come to that turnoff for Route 40 where it says El Chal 10 and El Calafate, the turnoff that Ramon kept driving past yesterday. Joaquin approaches. and he keeps driving past. That's it. I am never leaving this town. I am going to be stuck in Gorbunador Gregoris forever. This time, I am not going to do anything that would lead to one of Argentina's main arteries getting clogged. I scream at the top of my lungs, "What the fuck is happening?" Well, I scream it at the top of my lungs internally. Externally, I take a deep breath and politely inquire about this direction of travel. And Joaquin calmly explains it to me. All of the truckers always go down this road, he says. They never ever turn off at Route 40. It's always down this way, towards Rio Gallegos in the southeast, and then down to Punta Arenas in the very southern tip of the continent. But I tell him my Google Maps yesterday said to go back on Route 40. And he says, yes, obviously, because your destination is El Chalten. Ramon's destination was Punta Arenas. I type in Punta Arenas into Google Maps. And going this way, along Route 25, is by far the quickest way to get there. Ramon was right all along. I might not have been going the perfect way to get to my destination, but he did not miss his turn off. He pulled off that insane U-turn because he thought he was in the wrong. It turns out he pulled off that insane U-turn because I was in the wrong. I've really got no idea how many people couldn't get through that road yesterday because of that U-turn, and their days were massively inconvenienced because of me. As the sense of guilt washes over me, I come to the conclusion that I'm just going to go all the way to Rio Gallegos with Joaquin. Anything to get out of Gorbunador Gregoris and its surrounding areas. Gorbunador Gregoris to El Chalten is 296 kilometres of a journey along Route 40, but this way, going via Rio Gallegos, is an 879 kilometre trek. There will be more opportunities to get more lifts, I'm sure, but it's a massive journey and plenty of the day is gone. We take Route 27 down to the quieter Route 288, which goes out towards the Atlantic once again, and joins up with Route 3 at the town of Comandante Luis Piedrabuena. We arrive in the general area of Rio Gallegos coming up to 5 p.m. and it's highway all the way. After we go through a toll bridge, it's time for Joaquin to peel off right and continue south. So I have two options. I can continue with him and move towards a safer road for hitchhiking, or I can hop out here on the side of this highway. I choose the second option. Thankfully, there is a grassy bank right on the edge, so I can walk along, but I need to get across to the other side of the road, which is less than ideal. I see a mural that says, "Jesus te ama," Jesus loves you. And after the last few days, I'm unsure about the truth of this very optimistic piece of art. But maybe Jesus does indeed have some time for me, because seconds later, I spot a footbridge. I'm now on the correct side of the road, but this still feels fanciful. Cars are flying past on their way to the airport. It feels difficult and somewhat dangerous to be hitching on the side of a dual carriageway. I walk towards town and get myself to the bit where the dual carriageway begins, where vehicles are only beginning their movement up through the gears. It's by a distance the busiest road I've ever tried to hitchhike on. There's big rush hour energy, which feels kind of apt. Everyone is in a hurry to get on the road, and I'm in a hurry to get a lift before the traffic finishes up. There's so much happening out on the road that I'm not even sure if a hitchhiker is noticeable. On the quieter roads, it's easy to feel embarrassed when a solo car drives past and notices you, but rejects you. Now, I just want to be noticed. But Omar notices. That's the name of the Argentinian man who's fortunately on the outside lane of traffic. And he quickly pulls in when he spots me. You can sense my joy when he opens the door, because the first thing he says is, "Today is your lucky day."
When you don't understand, tell me. I don't know if they speak well. I don't know.
No, you do, man. It's perfect. It sounds great.
Yes. Omar is learning English and speaks it pretty well, so I am in no doubt that he is, in fact, off to El Calafate tonight.
Now I travel Calafate, to Calafate.
It might not quite be El Chalten, but it's close enough geographically, and it will do me just fine for this evening. In fact, getting to El Calafate tonight is a massive win.
Make kitesurf.
Oh, nice.
Omar is off to do some kitesurfing in the lakes around El Calafate. It's unclear how much he's going to party this weekend, though, because he is a similar age to me and his hangovers are starting to become more pronounced.
The other hangover is
terrible.
It's terrible.
Other than a fairly lengthy police check at a toll bridge.
Hola, ¿cómo andas? ¿Todo bien?
Todo bien, nosotros sí dije.
A Calafate, vamos.
¿Tenés su licencia?
Sí, sí, sí. Acá tenés seguro y tenés licencia.
It's smooth sailing. And I promise I'm not being overly dramatic when I regale him with my hitchhiking stories of the past few days.
Some really bad shit has happened.
You could not have given me a better outcome at 11:30 this morning. And the mate he passes to me has never tasted so good. I might have drank mate literally 3 other times in my life, but still.
Drink all the mate.
And then he give it back.
He finish.
Ah, okay.
Omar teaches me some mate manners.
When it's like an education in Argentina.
Okay.
You finish the mate. It's important.
And I give him some incredibly important English lessons.
I have to piss,
yeah.
No, you say...
No, sorry, I have to piss, I need to piss.
I need
to? Yeah, I need to piss, or I have to piss is the same thing. Then I...
Yes. Tengo o necesito.
Yeah.
Pero me habías dicho otra frase.
Sí.
To be honest, Omar seems to be finding life difficult at the moment, given the Argentine economy.
The Argentine people think food is expensive, the rent is expensive. This is inflation.
Yes.
Inflation. How do you say?
Inflation.
Inflation. This is a fucking problem.
And given a recent breakup.
No, it's got the cut.
Oh, you
the
just broke up?
Yeah.
When?
The first of the month.
Of March.
Oh
man, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to hear that.
I don't function. I don't understand. She don't understand me.
Okay.
We come into the general vicinity of El Calafate, and he pulls in, and we can see the town from above, under the gentle glow of the end of the sunset. I thought I'd be here 2 nights ago, or at worst, last night. But it was worth the wait. 16 hours on the road today, 730 kilometres covered, just 2 modes of transport. And crucially, 0 absolutely insane cock-ups.
I'm so agradecido. Gracias.
Thankful.
Thankful for my life, for my family, for my friends, for my work, for this. For speak with the other person, the other country is the same. Speak English with the other person from Calafate is great. The life is good.
Six and a half months earlier. I'm in Miami and I've gone to an absolutely massive casino. It's a big red barn near the airport. There's a Greyhound track outside and a couple of holes of golf. Inside, machines everywhere. And not just slots.
Like, you can have roulette and craps and everything, but not the live.
Yeah.
You know, it's got to be the automated stuff there.
Because blackjack isn't legal here, they've got video game dealers on screens, and you play the game digitally.
But because it's on a screen, it's legal.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm being shown around by Andrew Bleckman, a broadcaster for the sport I'm here to see.
Craps over here. What's your game in the casino? What's your
roulette? keep betting on black, keep doubling the stake.
Fucking fuck, that's my guy right there. You bet the streak. I mean, you just gotta bet it.
And he brings me down to the basement.
This is a sport about speed. A rock-hard ball moving faster than any other, curving and twisting with treacherous unpredictability. Men with lightning reflexes and ballet-like movements.
We've gone down to a massive floor where there's a large rectangular court made up of three solid walls and a net on the fourth side. Behind the net, there are theatre seats and there is a vision mixing studio, dressing rooms and a trophy room sitting nearby. This is a sport called Hiyalai. And I'm aware that it might not be the most famous sport in the world. You might just be hanging on in this episode right now, thinking that I've got to give you the big pitch on Hiyalai. Well, don't take the pitch from me. Take it from Horace Grant Jr. in Mad Men Season 3, Episode 4.
Gentlemen, imagine the perfect mixture of athletics, spectacle, and speed. Hiyalai. Hiyalai is like handball, only you fling the ball and catch the ball with this, basket thing.
It's more complicated than that. And dangerous. I'll leave the loose leaf, but it shows the way Hiyalai attendance is growing. In 7 years, it'll eclipse baseball.
Sadly, the optimism of the 1960s was probably misplaced. And in fact, attendance numbers at Hiyalai nosedived from the mid-20th century on. But here, the belief is that a renaissance is possible.
A special stadium called a fronton. And you can sit real close, which is a thrill because the ball goes 175 miles an hour.
So the basement of this casino is a fronton. This is Magic City fronton, to be specific. And there are two guys out there on the floor playing a few practice shots right now.
My name is Chris Bueno, and I'm from Miami, Florida. Hiyalai has always been a part of my life. My father was a professional Hiyalai player my entire life. He was professional since 1981. I was born in 1989, so I was born into the sport pretty much. I used to throw the ball around a little bit when I was like 6, 7, 8 years old. I threw it around a couple times. And then later on in life, I became the ball boy at Miami Hiyalai while my father was still playing professionally. I was 15 years old. My father was like on his last couple seasons. I was the ball boy there for maybe 2 years. And that was the time when I got the opportunity to practice on a real Hiyalai court with some of the best players in the world at that time. This sport is, you know, primarily from the Basque Country, and you got Spaniards and French players, you know, like that's where the sport originated, like right there in the Basque Country in between Spain and France. So like, it's predominantly like those players are the ones who play the sport.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Tournament of Champions of World Hiyalai salute you for tonight's 15-point partido. Round 5 in the Tournament of Champions. It's all tied up at 2 apiece, 2 wins for Tampa and 2 for Miami. This will be the deciding partido. Whoever wins this takes the trophy home with them.
The Hispanic influence in Latin America and the Philippines means that sport has travelled well beyond the Basque Country. And the Hispanic influence in Florida is why this is where the sport has peaked in the United States. In practice, the game is like your typical handball or squash, where a ball is volleyed off a wall.
Jesus scores! Point Tampa! Beautiful short hop catch by Zuleika and a strong return. Another fine short hop catch by Zuleika.
But the big difference comes in what you use to connect with the ball. It's not a bare hand, a glove, or a racket of any kind. The best way to describe it is as a long wooden claw, which scoops up the ball and then propels the ball at the wall.
That's off the cesta, Point Miami.
It's called a cesta.
This is a cesta, this is what we used to throw the ball. This is called the cinta, this is what we used to tie our cesta on.
The cinta is a long piece of ribbon hanging out of the cesta.
So pretty much you just want to tie it on. You want to go over and under a couple times just to make sure that you have it secure on your wrist and it doesn't fly off when you go to throw the ball. Make sure you're able to flex your wrist around because that's how you put spin on the ball.
Gotcha.
These are some cestas that they're still in the process of finishing up here. These are all handmade baskets. All the materials that we have here, and you can see some of them back here, I'll take this off, are imported from Spain to the U.S. You see some of these pieces of chestnut from the I believe it's the Pyrenees mountain range in the Basque region of Spain over there. See these pieces? They cut them down for the different frames. We have a whole process of a cesta start to finish. These usually take about a month to complete these whole things here. If we go back over this way too, we can show you. This is literally how they're brought in from Spain. One of our players this year, they have some family over in Spain. They brought him over. They bring him in these huge crates. It's the only place you can get him is over in the Basque region of Spain. So we literally have to send players over there, individuals, personnel from our program to pick this up, and then they craft it from hand here. Cestas as a whole, let's see here, they cost about, I say somewhere from like $300 to $500. So there are kind of some barriers to entry with the cost of the cestas, and they have to be handmade. And there's really only a handful of people in the world that still make these by hand. So it's a whole process. You have to learn from somebody. It's just kind of passed down from generation to generation. It's really not videos on how to do it. And we're fortunate enough that we have one of our guys who does officiating, he does cesta making, and then he also plays at night too. So he's kind of like our Jackie Moon. He does it all for us. So it's great.
Chris is volleying away with a man named Ron Madrigal, and Ron shows me all the different jerseys he wears.
Yeah, so this is our jersey. It said the Magic City Pelota, that's our game. And at the back, it's my name and my preference number. This is my number 12, that's my preference number that I'm using.
Why 12? Tom Brady fan?
No, that's my birthday. It just happened, that's my birthday.
Ron, affectionately known as Ron Ron, is from the Philippines.
In the Philippines, I play Hialeah for 6 years professionally, but I retired already. I said, I'm going to go to the United States and do something else. Like, I don't want to play anymore.
Right.
Yeah, look for a different job, different career, but it looks like Hialeah is looking for me. You know what I mean? It's like, I can't escape Hialeah. In the Philippines, we play only singles, and most of the people there bet for us. That's the dirty part of Hialeah. You know, people think that we're doing something like, you know, in basketball, point shaving.
Yeah.
So most of the people think that we're doing that in the Philippines. That's why they banned the Hialeah.
So the sport is banned
in the Philippines. They said it's illegal now. That's why the Hialeah is dead already in the Philippines.
And was there any truth to the rumors?
No.
Did you know of anybody point shaving?
No. Because we have, so in the cage, we have the player's manager watching our game. So the player's manager is familiar to your game. He knows what you're doing. He knows if you are like dropping the ball, if you are giving up the point. They know. If they found out that you're doing that on the same day, they're going to fire you.
Yeah, yeah.
So people who bet on us think that, oh, there's point shaving, or there's like something bad happening inside the court.
So I assume then that there's a whole, just so many players in the Philippines who then have to leave, who lose their jobs, right, because of this.
That's true. It happened. That's why Hialeah in the Philippines, like in 70s, 80s, 90s, is very famous. It's like bigger than basketball in the Philippines.
Right.
Because like those basketball players in the Philippines watch Hialeah. They watching us playing Hialeah. But since like there's a dirty issue against like gambling, dropping the points, the Hialeah get, you know, banned.
Banned. Yes. So is there an underground Hialeah scene?
No more. There's no more court in the Philippines right now.
So they destroyed all the courts as well?
They demolish it. They turn it into like a grocery, a mall. There's one small, they called it Canchita. Like smaller with this one. Maybe like line 12, maybe.
Okay.
That's where our friends play right now. It's outside court.
And that's it. And obviously just for fun. It's not professional.
No. There's no professional. Only here in the United States.
So they just wear like basketball shoes today?
Mostly basketball shoes. I mean, a little something for support for ankles and stuff for most guys.
I mean, my father always says that everybody loves Hialeah, but not everybody knows it, you know, because it's true. Not everybody knows Hialeah, but once people come out and they watch what we do, or even go out there and throw the ball a couple times, they fall in love with the sport. It's what happened to me. It's what happened to maybe 99% of the players. Everybody who played Hialeah from the first time they picked up the basket, they loved the sport and they just never put it down.
The rebirth of Hialeah is still very much in the ambitious phase, but games are now shown on ESPN3.
And are you earning money?
Oh, I'm winning money. We get paid a base salary, you know, but our incentives are based on winning, you know, so it's kind of like you have to stay healthy. You have to stay healthy. You have to stay out there and you have to be winning. If not, that's why it gets frustrated. That's why when your confidence gets low, sometimes you get out there and you're like, I need to win this game, you know, and then it's like, that's when you start not playing well at all. You play the best when you're not thinking that. You play the best when you're like, okay, I got this. Like, you know, like you're not even thinking about it, actually. You don't even think that. You're just like, it's just everything goes so fast and like everything's moving so fast, but it really is moving in slow motion. Like you see everything so clearly, the ball is so easy to catch, you know, you're throwing it right where you want to. Like that's when you play the best and that's when your confidence is high. But of course, yeah, like the incentives are, they put a little bit of pressure on you, you know, because people know that it's, you know, you get your base salary, but it's about winning, you know, that's where everybody makes their money.
So I guess you all hope that, you know, being on ESPN3 and hopefully that the curve is on the way up, that everybody, you know, earns a little bit more cash at the end of the day.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, hopefully we could get like a network deal and, you know, the network starts helping bump up our salaries. That would be the best case scenario. You know, honestly, for me, I've taken a different perspective. Like this is pretty much like a dream come true. I've always loved sports, not just highlight, like I love sports. So the opportunity to be able to play a sport and to provide for my family at the same time, you know, it's an excellent opportunity, you know, so I'm truly blessed.
This is a sport about danger. Courageous athletes relying on learned skills and competitive instincts.
We are the only front-on that doing all year round.
All year round, okay.
Yes. We only hope off-season 2 months, like December and January. But after that, February to November, all year round, we play high alert.
This is a sport about tradition. Its history dating back centuries, its form unchanging.
Traditionally, Miami High Life was the most competitive fronton. When we had you know, hundreds of frontons here in the United States, Miami High Life was known to be the most competitive fronton. Now you had Dania High Life, which was also a competitive fronton too. Those two, and I mean, you could talk to some of these Basque guys here. When you talk to them, they say like coming to Miami is like a movie for them. They're from the Basque country in Spain. You know, they have mountains and beautiful beaches and coasts, but it's not very populated, you know, cities. Here, they come here and it's like a movie for them, being able to get paid to do something that you love, plus go on vacation to Miami.
This is a sport about emotion, winning and losing. Action and reaction.
That's the thing that we need, the support of people and the exposure of the game, because that's the reason why Hayala is not really big now, because the exposure it's limited. But once, like right now, ESPN3 and it's go to the other local channel, you know, it's gonna be big.
This is a sport about excitement.
The optimism is infectious, but really, the connection to gambling defines this game, and that has long been both a blessing and a curse. So pari-mutuel betting on the likes of horse racing, greyhounds, and hialeah has been legal in Florida since the 1930s, as in, you legally had to have these sports on site in order to have your slot machines and other such gambling outlets. But what was once a big social in-person event for South Florida gamblers is no longer of interest for online gamblers, it seems. And in 2021, it was decided that casinos in the state were no longer required to carry these pari-mutuel sports. So you can have your slots without your hialeah now. Bad news for the sport. So what we're witnessing in this casino really is an attempt to keep the sport on life support. And later this year, the World Hialeah League are due to lose their lease at this casino.
This is the world's fastest and most exciting sport. This is Hialeah.
Y'all gotta realize she a child, she ain't grown.
The overall stated aim of my time on this side of the Atlantic is to backpack through Latin America. Public transport, hostels, and living on a budget is essential. Of course, people would say doing this is impossible in the United States because of a lack of transport, no hostels, and no cheap things whatsoever. But my stubbornness takes hold, and I've decided that at the very least, I'll be taking the Miami Metro bus everywhere I go in this city. And my favourite aspect of the bus is that you have to yank down a yellow cord as hard as you can to make the bus stop. Actually, no, I tell a lie. My favourite aspect of the bus is the drama you can always overhear.
Put her on the phone! Put her on the fucking phone, bruh! Put her on the phone, girl. I don't got time for this shit. I'm going through my own goddamn shit right now to deal with her fuck ass. Put her on the phone.
I ride the Metro bus to Little Havana and stop off at Maximo Gomez Park, also known as Domino Park.
Well, it's a place to gather people that have nothing else to do than play domino or chess.
This is Paul, one of the many older gentlemen who frequent this park.
So mostly people who are retired?
I would say 100% are retired. And the rest are ex-bank robbers and people like that. We used to come when we were young. There is nothing else to do in this part of the world. Well, I come late, you know, like in the afternoon, but there's people that come at 9 o'clock here when they open up.
And they spend their whole day here?
They spend the whole day.
Sipping coffee, smoking cigars, playing dominoes in the sunshine. This is what retirement is supposed to look like. Paul, however, is a chess player.
Are you the best chess player here?
No, I'm the number 7.
Number 7.
And I don't suspect he sees dominoes as being on the same level as chess.
There must be some pretty incredible games of dominoes.
If you say so. Not as competitive as chess, though. Chess, there is nothing to chance. It's you against the other guy.
There's a large mural on the wall, and it is of the first ever Summit of the Americas, which was held in Miami in 1994. All the leaders of the Americas are in this mural, except for one Fidel Castro. The bust of Generalísimo Máximo Gómez is erected inside the gates. He was an influential figure in Cuba's War of Independence. And Spanish is the most commonly spoken language inside the park.
In which year did you first come to Domino Park?
71.
71. Is it the same?
No, it's a different kind of town. There were no fences around the place. And you could play all night if you wanted.
Right.
And there was no crime, no ugly surprises at night. You could come safely and play. Now it's different. They have fences and they lock the place up at 6 o'clock in the afternoon. The place is closed now. So there is very little to do at night for the retired people, like in the old times. We used to send an old lady to buy coffee. I would play all night until next day in the morning, till 10 o'clock in the next day. Now you can't do that. Place is closed.
So what do you do when the place closes? Do you play chess at home?
No. I do some cooking and I have my dinner. Before, we never have to worry about having dinner. We just came to play.
He's off to start a new game of chess. It doesn't appear that he's overly confident, or else his opponent is about to get badly hustled.
Will you win?
No. The guy is a big master, really a master. He usually beats me.
A little north of here, in the Wynwood district of town, there's a crowd of people watching a soccer game in a bar.
Side of Cujo for a scoring moment. Is it on the field or on the bench? Diaz trying to provide it on the field!
It's Columbus Crew versus Inter Miami.
1-0 Columbus!
This is September 2022, so we're nearing the end of Inter Miami's third ever season. And I talked to some of the fans in this bar.
The fans were born before the club. So we've been here waiting for a club in Inter Miami, in the city of Miami, for years, years. The last time we see football, soccer, in this town was in the Fusion, Miami Fusion.
The Fusion is in a feeding frenzy. The man who has whetted Miami's appetite for winning is Diego Serna, who has left keepers gawking. He and Alex Pineda Chacon have pounded their way to rank 1 and 2 in MLS scoring, and Miami is atop the league.
Miami Fusion were formed in 1998. They started slowly as a club, and then they hired Ray Hudson, the former player and now more known as a TV commentator, as their head coach.
This is a great sports event. This is the best ticket money can buy in South Florida. And it rocks. It absolutely rocks.
And Hudson actually did a very good job. They topped the regular season table in 2001.
Here's Pineda Chacon, though, getting away from Williams, looking through for Serna. Perez looking good for the ball. Oh, what a goal for Brecky! Oh, my goodness! Brecky pounces on the situation, sees Howard a couple steps off his line, curls it in, and looky here, we're tied.
But this was a chaotic time for the MLS. They wanted to reduce the league size from 12 teams to 10 and decided that Miami Fusion should be one of the teams to take the bullet. And it wasn't until David Beckham arrived to help establish Inter Miami that the city had MLS football again.
After they came, we were just begging for a soccer club. These guys brought the hope out to us again. We were really, like, waiting for this thing. And thanks to Jorge Mas, thanks to David Beckham, now it's a reality.
And you might think that, given the club is so new, there haven't been any fan groups established yet. But not only is there one, not only is there two, but there are 5 official fan groups already associated with Inter Miami. You've got The Siege, you've got Vice City 1896, you've got Southern Legion, you've got Nacion Rosa y Negro, and you've got IMS 2020. Together, they make up La Familia. Here's Cesar.
On game day, you know what I'm saying? I mean, we all have different styles, you know? Like, I'm from Vice City. My name is Cesar. I'm from Vice City. We're a little more like South American, you know what I'm saying? A little more barista, more barra brava style. I mean, it's more like a cultural thing, you know? We have guys that came from Argentina, Chile, Colombia, different parts of South America, Honduras, Mexico, and that's what the style that they grew up in. You know, they're just doing what, you know, their families have taught them, you know? And then you have like a different style, like me. Like my name, I was born and raised in the United States. I wasn't raised with the football culture. I got into it when I was a little bit older. And it's more of like a hybrid, you know what I'm saying? More like European, more South American, like, you know, meshed together. I don't tell people to stop supporting their club. You know, there's a lot of people that come here from supporting other clubs from other countries, whether it be River Plate or Boca Juniors or San Lorenzo. There's a bunch of different clubs that people support, you know, Junior de Barranquilla. A lot of people support different clubs, but we never tell people, you don't want to stop supporting your club. No, we tell people, look, you can still support your club, but you're getting an opportunity to come out to the stadium. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of people that miss that. And like I mentioned, like I didn't grow up with this, but there's a lot of people that come up to me and they tell me, Cesar, I feel like I'm at home. Oh, Cesar, I haven't felt this in a long time. And that's what confirms that what we're doing is right. You know what I'm saying? What we're trying to build is correct, because there's people that are connecting with home. There's people that have a real sense of like, oh, I did this before. I haven't done it before. People are acting like kids again. It's a beautiful thing what's going on out here, because, you know, for a long time they've been out of their country. They did this when they were young. They did this when they were in their 20s. Now they're 40 years old. And now Inter Miami is giving them an opportunity and a platform to be able to do this.
Where does Inter Miami now sit in that sphere of all these different sports?
Here's JC.
Good question. So as you guys know, international city, you think of Miami, you think of the Miami Dolphins, the Miami Heat. But I'll tell you what, they don't have the fan base that we have.
Now, the biggest name in the squad or on the sideline for the team right now is, of course, the manager, Phil Neville.
So today, you guys come out with the back five. You make the change halfway through the first.
Do you know why we made the change?
That's what the question was.
Yeah, well, we made the change because Sergi just didn't feel 100%. So, I think what Leo said on Thursday was we take accountability for the defeat. I think you always look for things to be negative about Franco. So we won fight. Can I finish speaking?
Sure.
Are you going to interrupt? Can I finish speaking?
Sure.
Okay, because I don't interrupt your question. Okay, so don't interrupt mine. Show some fucking respect. So, sorry for the language. What was the question? Ask me the question again, please, Franco.
Why
Is Phil Neville a good manager?
I think we need another manager. Yeah. We do. Someone that needs, someone that understands the type of playing, because you know, we have players and 65 minutes, 70 minutes, they're not running anymore.
I think the fans understand what he's trying to do. But ultimately, like, if we get to the playoffs, you know, we'll, I think, like I mentioned, we'll be able to see a lot more of him. If we don't get to the playoffs, I think his, you know, his time here in Inter Miami will probably be a little bit short.
I also speak to Fernando, who calls himself El Presidente.
Well, Miami is a melting pot, we know that, and it's people from every single corner of the world, but especially the passion of football, soccer, coming from the South Americans most, and Central Americans. So we really have a good support group. Everybody loves us because we are, you know, very family oriented on the stands. I'm from Argentina, which is, you know, the culture of football is in our veins.
Cue breaking fourth wall sound effects. Yes, this interview is coming at you from September 2022. But I've managed to bend space and time, and I'm speaking to you from 2025. And it's fair to say that Inter Miami has gone on to bigger and better things since my visit. They now possess the talents of Lionel Messi. Lionel Messi, who is now a World Cup winner. And I'm blissfully unaware of those two facts whilst chatting to Fernando, and Fernando is blissfully unaware as well.
Surely you can get the best Argentinian of all to finish off his career here, no, in Lionel Messi?
Well, that would be a dream. If we can get Messi playing for the Inter Miami sooner than later, that would be fantastic. He got one more year at PSG. First, I want him to be world champion with Argentina in Qatar.
And it's kind of fitting that my crappy microphone has a bit of a meltdown at the end there. I think that's a sign from 2025 me to 2022 me about what was about to occur. Because 2022 me is full of hope. He fully thinks that he's going to be in Argentina by November. He doesn't know if Argentina will win the World Cup, but he does know he's going to be in Argentina when the World Cup begins. But little does he know that he's going to screw his trip up to the point where he won't even make it to Argentina until 2023, and that he will miss out on the biggest party in the history of the planet and live a life suffering of permanent FOMO. My next story is in Delray Beach, so I need to get there from Miami. And guess what? Miami to Delray Beach is a journey you can make extremely easily via public transport. Ever heard of a little thing called the Tri-Rail? That's actually not a rhetorical question at all. This is the United States of America, so there's every chance this very efficient piece of public transport is genuinely unheard of. On the hour-long journey up the coast, I remember my favourite thing about Florida. It's not Disneyland, or Florida, or other things that I can tell you about Florida. No, it's Florida Man. I'm sure you're aware of the Florida Man meme, where you type your birthday followed by the words Florida Man into Google, and you see what absolutely insane headline Google throws back to you. Generally speaking, it's to do with a Florida man breaking the law in an unconventional manner. Some real examples include: Florida man drives date to sports bar on stolen Walmart mobility scooter. Florida man admits killing goat and drinking its blood for pagan sacrifice, would still like to be senator. And Florida man arrested in local park for quote-unquote practicing karate on swans. And the latest one? Florida man tries to make pillow fighting a real sport. I'm at the reception of a gym in Delray Beach. There is a photo of Muhammad Ali on the wall and a cabinet of martial arts awards. There's a pretty intense jiu-jitsu session happening in the main room, but once the martial arts are over, a bunch of new fighters come along, and it's time for the real business.
You ready? Oh, yes. Are you ready? Yeah. Pillow fight! Oh, great.
I'm TJ, originally from New York. My history in PFC, it's definitely been a journey, I would say. I knew about it about like 2 years ago, 2 years ago, I had an office. I was renting an office over there for Federal. And at that point, Steve told me about it. He's like, man, I'm thinking about starting the pillow fighting thing. And I was like, pillow fighting? All right, cool. I'm down with it.
It's my understanding that pillow fighting brings out the beast in you. And let me tell you, by the display of the Marines in this competition, the beast has arrived.
Yeah.
Vince Edme, a U.S. Marine, has shown up.
PFC staff gave us a call. They're like, hey, yeah, we're looking for some Marines to participate. And I was like, Marines don't pillow fight. like that's kind of weird. Marines don't do that. And then, like, kept talking to him, and I was like, yeah, actually, let's do this.
And a former UFC fighter, current bare-knuckle fighter, Marcus Brumage, shows up.
So anything that has anything to do with some type of combat sporting event, I usually try to put my hands on.
Okay, right. So that's the immediate question I have. Going from bare-knuckle to pillow fighting, that is quite the transition, isn't it?
Not really. It's still combat sports. The transition from bare knuckle to pillow fight is good because I'm also a Tai Chi instructor, so you know you got to go from hard to soft. So what better way to implement that is having an active bare knuckle fighting career and a pillow fighting career.
Yuri Villafor is the man who actually runs this gym.
I got involved, actually, Steve came to my gym. He was looking for a place to do a tryout. He said, hey, I got these two pillows here, you a fighter? I was like, man, pillow fighting, I don't really understand that. He's like, no, I got two pillows here, you want to do it? And then he smacked me on the pillow for the first time, and I'm like, wow, this is for real. The best thing about it was like, I've been a professional fighter for like 10 years. It didn't hurt me, but I felt I was in a fight, and it was something serious.
And the Steve he's just mentioned is Steve Williams, CEO of the Pillow Fight Championship. He can't make it today, so I call him up on Zoom. His brother appears to have had the germ of the idea for this.
MMA is only legal in about 15 states. My brother was looking at it, and he said, you know, if you want to do something everywhere, why don't you do pillow fighting? At the time, you know, I'm thinking MMA. I mean, I wanted to punch him because I thought it was just a stupid idea.
Maybe Steve's initial vision of this organization was a little bit different to how it looks today.
Not thinking idealistically at the time, I started looking at the pillow fight concept, and we did a couple fights. We hired some fashion models to fight, and then we saw obviously the passe idea of the sexy pillow fight. You know, you could do it maybe one time, and after that, you don't have a business anymore. So we went the total opposite direction. When, you know, hardcore MMA fighters swinging pillows, which I think everybody loves a pillow fight. And in a sense, they remember when they had one and greatest time of their life. So they get happy thinking about a pillow fight.
The big takeaway here is that Steve Williams sure had some unbelievably joyous pillow fighting moments when he was a child. And I'm happy for him.
Our bigger matches are going to be, for example, we'll have a big fight inside the bare knuckle events, bare knuckle fight club. We'll have a bare knuckle fight, a pillow fight, article fight, pillow fight. That's when we feel like we're really up hit it in the big time. I think that it's just got a long way to go, and I think it'll be around forever. I mean, in a sense, pillow fighting probably was the original combat sport. I'm not sure, you know, what came before fist fighting, but it probably was a bear rug, you know, some Neanderthals that were beating each other up with a, you know, some kind of fur.
It's an interesting historical theory, but I like it.
Two fighters just absolutely walloping each other right now. I mean, they are just swinging wildly.
Jesus Christ. This back and forth. This is better than a lightsaber match.
The pillows, by the way, come with three handles on one end.
Leo looking a little winded at this point as he is backed into the corner, just trying anything to swing his way out of the corner.
And fights are won on points, usually.
I want to remind you, this is a professional fighter who is winded in a pillow fight.
It just shows you how much.
That's it. Fight's over.
When the fight is over, Mike Trujillo has retired from the match. He is absolutely winded and exhausted. And TJ Jenkins goes on to win this match by knockout.
You know, I was the first one with a knockout. I had another knockout that I don't know if they registered yet, but I was another knockout in Delray Boxing. And Just been having fun, man. Having fun, letting the hair down and just swinging that pillow, you know, just putting some people to sleep. That's so, it.
Unbelievable, because yeah. I didn't realize that. I didn't realize that there were knockouts in pillow fighting.
Yeah, I knocked some people out. Yes, sir. Yeah.
Obviously, just with a particularly harsh hit to the head.
With a smack in the head. With either smack in the head or hitting the ribs, real height, like real heavy, you know.
A hit in the ribs could knock a guy out.
Yeah, you could be winded.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I knocked his wind out.
What was your reaction when you hit a guy in the head with a pillow?
What was my reaction?
Yeah,
I was excited. It bring back memories. We having a pillow fight. You know what I'm saying? Like, come on. Like, I'm ready to beat your head in. I used to do this with my brothers and sisters. So doing it now on live TV, on getting interviewed just for smacking somebody in the head with some pillows. Come on, you turn that down, man. You don't really want to do this.
But knocking somebody out. I mean, does that bring back memories? Were you knocking your brother and sister out as a kid?
I had a little style to it. I made it look good. You know what I mean? I feel like knocking somebody out with a pillow on live TV, that's embarrassing.
That's a good shot. That's a good shot.
The most surprising thing is how nervous you'll get. It's a pillow fight, but you get so nervous. I'm like, oh my God. Like, first, it's like, if you lose to a pillow fight, it's like, oh my God, I just lost a pillow fight. But it was just nerve wracking. And I was just surprised about how much cardio, technique, even how much thinking that's involved in something like this.
What's the worst injury you've ever got while pillow fighting?
The worst injury is just your wrist. Your shoulders get tired. It's not even an injury. Your shoulders get tired. Your wrist get tired. But at that, this is pretty much an injury-less sport.
What's your go-to move when you're pillow fighting?
What's my go-to move? The go-to move is a 360. Okay. Is pretty much when you spin, do a full 360 spin, and hit your opponent in the face with a pillow. So that's my go-to move. Or for me, because I'm short, I don't even have a name for this move. I just jump and whack you on the head, like a whack-a-mole jump.
What's your nickname? Do you have a cage name?
Short Fuse. Short Fuse. That's what they call me. You know, Vince Short Fuse Edme.
We wouldn't like you when you're angry.
That it also because I'm short and I boom, explode, tick, 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 boom.
What's the ideal height and physique for a pillow fighter?
Me, I'm short and stocky. If you're like slim, then I feel like you can move a lot better. Then you're more nimble on your feet. There's no such thing as weight classes in PFC. So you could be going against a giant, you know, so you got to be able to hit him in the head.
What's it like to take a pillow to the head full force?
To be honest, it's surprisingly, you feel it, but it's not enough to knock you out. It's there, but it's not there. So, I mean, I can always show you what it is.
And he does show me. In fact, I work it into one version of an intro for this slot.
Okay, let me think about this. I've never been more nervous for something in my entire life. Okay, I reckon this is one of the biggest participation sports in the world. It is pillow fighting, it is PFC. We are here in Florida, and everybody needs a pillow fight.
I thought you were going to hit him once. I didn't know you were going to hit him twice. You took it.
Yeah, all good, man.
Love. You messed it up. You got to do it again. The world needs a pillow.
What did I say?
You said everybody needs
a pillow
fight. Oh, no. You know I'm going to do this five times too, right?
The world needs a pillow fight. Shit, okay.
The world, you know.
Okay, you are very welcome along to beautiful Florida. I am here to find out a little bit more about what I think is one of the biggest participation sports in the world. It is pillow fighting. It is going global. The world needs a pillow fight. That was a cleaner hit as well.
Yeah.
I'm taking the hits now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a good one. What point of your life did you ever think you'd be sitting in a dojo at Boca Raton, Florida?
Oh, the most optimistic point of my life. I mean, absolutely.
Having seen these athletes demonstrate their prowess in the pillow fighting game, I have one last question.
You say it's an injuryless sport and maybe it's like risk-free, but I mean, I've seen movies, I've seen people die as a result of a pillow. I mean, the old smother technique. I mean, is that allowed in this sport or is that outlawed?
I have yet to see somebody die from a pillow. the smother technique, there's no smother technique. They should implement that, maybe, you know, like, you know, boost it up a little bit, but there's no smother technique.
I've seen movies and they like kill people with pillows.
Yeah.
It can happen.
You're not allowed to do that in this, though.
No, you're not. Or put anything inside of the pillows, too.
Can I give you a piece of advice? Like,
yeah,
we have some pillow fighting advice?
Oh, yeah, give me some. What you got?
So I've seen movies. I've seen some scary movies. Mm-hmm. And people die by a pillow, you know?
People die by a pillow?
Yeah, you know, people, like, put it on somebody's face.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
You've got a lethal weapon on your hand there. Have people ever considered that is actually the case?
I feel like these is a weapon. I feel like my soul is a weapon. You know what I'm saying? I feel like my mind is a weapon. That's what I feel. But I could use it as a weapon. Whatever's in my hands, I can get it popping with it. Okay. You know what I mean? That's my main thing.
Sounds like you're not going to take my advice.
I don't want to kill nobody with the pillow.
Sadly, my genius plan for dominating the world of pillow fighting cannot be put to the test, because I have one more destination in Florida, which is Gainesville. I go back south to Miami in order to travel north. Why? Because I'm a backpacker and I'm doing this all via public transport. And it's finally time to get on a Greyhound bus.
I'm going to check real quick, just make sure it has toilet paper. I think it did. But I'll put another roll back there just in case. Do anybody have any questions? First stop would be Ocala, Marion Oaks. And then we have Ocala, the actual Ocala stop. Thank you.
The Greyhound bus gets a bad rap. On the Wikipedia list of notable incidents and collisions, there are only 14 entries, and the company was founded way back in 1914. So I don't know why my American friends speak so ill of the Greyhound bus, given the chances of me being in a notable incident and or collision are clearly quite slim. Yes, there's a certain brutality to these bus experiences, but I kind of like them. We get to one stop, for example, which is a stop where we're not allowed to get off and purchase food at the petrol station. We were told about this before we left on our journey. But when I ask the driver if I can get off and purchase food at the petrol station, the driver shouts at me for asking a stupid question and tells me to sit down. I mean, he told us before we left. It's my fault for forgetting his very clear instructions. I respect that. On another leg of the journey, I sit beside a woman who missed her flight to New York, didn't have insurance on it, and is now travelling overland. It's currently Saturday, and she says it will be Monday when she gets there. This makes my journey to the north of the state seem very brief, and I've gone to Gainesville because it's home to the University of Florida. Their football team is called the Gators, and they're in action against the University of Utah. The Florida Gators play their games at Ben Hill Griffin Stadium, more commonly known as the Swamp. It's not the first time I've been to a college football game, so I already know that it's my favourite type of American football. Why? Well, college football tailgates are complete and utter chaos. And so I record countless conversations around this stadium, and the result is this completely normal 7 minutes of content. You've been warned.
I'm Tanner.
Noah.
I mean, I woke up at like 11:30. I cracked the cold one with the boys. We had some buffalo chicken dip this afternoon.
It's the only way to do it. It's the only way to do it. It's the only way to do it in Gainesville, baby.
Yeah.
Any secrets to how you get your buffalo dip so good?
Gotta let it stew. That's the way to do it.
That's the way to do it.
You gotta let the ingredients get to know each other.
Yes, exactly. If it doesn't marinate, it's no good.
Out of the womb of Gator. That's what it's all about. A lot of ups and downs, but more ups and downs, right?
What's been the lowest low?
The lowest low, the 2010 Baseball National Championship. Tyler Thompson couldn't hit a freaking pop fly, grounds into a double play, and my whole world was over. Can you believe that?
I cannot believe Tyler Thompson would even think of doing that.
Can you believe it? I mean, it's unbelievable. All he did was hit fly balls the entire year, and the freaking guy hits into a double play at a national championship on the line.
And where did Tyler Thompson end up?
He was actually a great kid. Really good player. Nice guy.
Is it true that this is the home of Gatorade?
Absolutely. Yeah. Gatorade. You know, that those people were sweating back there in the 70s, the 80s. They didn't know what to fucking do, but the Gators had them because they had that Gatorade shit. It's not just a sports school. It's a smart school. That's what we're all about. We're all about the smarts and the sports.
Let me tell you a little bit about, I don't know. Where are you from?
I'm from Ireland.
Ireland?
Yeah.
Okay, so you know, like, Utah, we're playing Utah today?
Yeah.
That's like a, let me compare it to your Irish stuff, right?
Yeah, go ahead.
So that's like a Celtic, right?
Yeah, they're Irish.
Is there any alligators around?
Yeah, Lake Alice, right back there. You can go, go. A lot of tailgaters over there. You can even pet them too.
All right.
Yeah, call them. They'll come up right to the bank and give them a little belly rub, and you'll be good to go.
They roll over for you.
It's pretty cool. It's pretty special.
You were telling me that this is like a frat house right here.
Yeah, this is Delta Tau Delta. After this, we'll take you inside.
Am I allowed in?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Will we do that?
Yeah, let's go.
Let's go. Okay. Would we like walk?
Yeah.
Let's talk. Let's do it.
As it turns out, I am refused entry into the frat. And if this was by a college student telling me that I'm too old or not cool enough to get in, I would totally accept this. But as it turns out, it's a 40 or 50 something year old man who tells me where to go. That is the real kick in the balls.
How do you think that whole experience of trying to get into a frat party went?
Oh, you know, everybody was respectful.
I saw you drinking a massive bottle of Smirnoff Ice. What was the thought process behind that?
I went to this place called KK's. It's our favorite place to stop at. Shout out to Mr. KK himself. But this was the only cold bottle, single in the fridge, so it's what I got. You know, I was looking at that Smirnoff Ice, but it's what I ended up getting, so...
How much do you love Smirnoff Ice?
I love buying Smirnoff Ice as six packs for my friends' birthdays. I love icing them on their birthday. It's fucking great, you know? My buddy Dylan back home, he's one of my roommates. His birthday was August 16th, shout out to him. And I iced him. He had like three ices first thing in the morning, like 9 a.m.
That's a lot of ices.
Yeah, so he loves that shit.
What do you think the future of Smirnoff Ice is?
I think it's got a long future, man. Long, long future. I mean, I don't see it going away anytime because who doesn't like getting ice for their fucking birthday, mate?
Would you die for Smirnoff Ice?
I would die for Smirnoff Ice. I'd die for alcohol in general.
That's a little bit troubling.
I'm of Norwegian descent, so, you know, not Irish, but over there in Europe, so... I respect the European culture, man.
Fuck Utah. They suck.
They have never seen 90,000 rednecks going fucking stupid. And they're going to come in here and they're going to be shell-shocked. Because you see it's raining. What is it, 2 hours till game time? It's raining right now. It's going to be humid as fuck in there. And those storming Mormons don't know what the fuck's about to happen. I'll tell you that right now. I'll give you a score prediction. We're hanging a 40 burger on these boys. And then they're catching this five-hour flight back home. And they're going to cry to their five wives.
There was a guy there earlier on who said he was from University of Florida, and he was like, it's the rednecks versus the Mormons. Is that true?
I mean, what do you guys think? I'd say so, maybe. Possibly.
Are you Mormon?
We're Mormon.
Yeah?
Yeah. All around, yeah. I mean, if that's the term, that's the term. I don't know why it is, but sure. Yeah.
We can't argue with it.
What's a Mormon tailgate like? How does it differ from this?
What'd you say, Taz? You're the tailgate man.
No, I mean, just
it's
the classic burgers.
It's a tailgate without alcohol. There's nothing more to it. Same story. Same thing.
Yeah.
No alcohol, though. Yeah.
You've got better memories than the rest of the people, right?
Damn straight.
Yeah.
Yep.
Enjoy the food. Nice cold Coke. Can't beat it before the game, you know?
What's the secret to being a good Mormon?
Loving other people. You know, not judging others and just, you know, being nice, you know, being a good member of the community.
I'm here with somebody who is a YouTuber.
Yes,
and
Dave. My name's Dave.
And what do you do on YouTube?
I ask people strictly what do they think heaven is and what's it like.
And what do you think?
I think it's great. I think it's wonderful. And I hope we all go there, everyone.
What is life?
Man, life's an accumulation of memories. You gotta really feel it out. You gotta do the best you can. You gotta treat people with respect. And you gotta love the Gators. If you don't love the Gators, you're not living life. That's just how it is.
What do you think the threshold is for getting into heaven and getting accepted?
Simply asking Jesus Christ to be your Lord and Savior. It's not about works. It's not about being a non-sinner. It's about asking Jesus Christ if you can come.
Life? I mean... You're fucking here, man. Do whatever the fuck you want. That's my take. I mean, if you're a Gators fan, go Gators. If you're not a Gators fan, well, fuck you. That's number one.
Are you going to heaven?
Yes, I am.
What's the worst thing you've ever done?
Worst thing I've ever done? Sex out of marriage. I have...
Hell?
Number one, do whatever the fuck you want, because it's your life. Have fucking fun, guys.
Did he forgive you?
Yes, absolutely.
What other bad things have you done?
Probably most things you can think of outside of murder.
I've also not murdered anybody. Do you think we're born broken?
Born broken?
Yeah.
Damn, that's depression as shit. I think that people can mend themselves over time. I think people are perfect as an individual. I think as a whole we're kind of fucked up, but I think as individuals,
people are good people, and you gotta have faith in humanity. Otherwise, what's the point of keep going on, man? You gotta have faith. You gotta have faith in humanity.
I mean, if you're born broken, that kind of sucks. You know, I feel like that's more situational, though. You know, it depends on how you're born, but everyone can fucking come back from being broken. Like, all men who are married, probably, they've had their heart broken at least once.
Push forward,
and, you know, there are a lot of strong men out there, so keep on going, guys.
And strong women, bro. You know, trans rights are human rights, baby. We support everybody. If you're a gator, we love you.
Part of me regrets never exchanging details with Tyler and Noah. They seem like the sort of crazy geniuses who are going to do something incredible with their lives. There is a game of football to be played. And the rain clears just in time to watch their quarterback Anthony Richardson rush for 3 touchdowns in front of 90,000 people. Richardson will go on to be drafted by the Indianapolis Colts as the 4th overall pick in 2023. And Florida gets the win, 29-26. But the highlight of the game, and every game at the Swamp, is the end of the 3rd quarter. Stadium lights off, phone lights or lighters on. Tom Petty, probably the most famous son of Gainesville. This has been episode 9 of Diverted, a 10-part original series for Off the Ball, produced by me, Owen Shahan. A big thank you to everyone at Pillow Fight Championship, at Magic City Hialeah, and even the Lunatics of Gainesville for being just so helpful and so kind to me. Except for the middle-aged man who didn't let me into the frat house. Screw you. All of the conversations took place in September 2022. This was the first place I visited, and so a lot of stuff has happened since then, not least in the United States. And maybe a 2025 experience will be quite different. I must say I love any of you who've clicked follow, subscribe or rated this 5 stars. My handle across social media platforms is Owen Shahan, as all one word, and there is video content across those platforms to accompany this podcast, and all of that info is in the show description. The next episode of Diverted is the 10th and last episode of Diverted, and it's back to Argentina. coming to terms with missing out on the 2022 World Cup celebrations is my final task. And of course, on the hitchhiking timeline, my remaining job is to get myself to Ushuaia. Chat to you then. Thanks for listening.